This is the ASC podcast brought to you by the Communications Committee of the Association for Surgical Education. Embracing the mission of excellence, innovation, and scholarship, the ASC is impacting surgical education globally.
Your ASC podcast host today. I'm excited to welcome Dr. Shayna Theodore and Ricardo Bello to speak on this podcast on climate change. Dr. Theodore is an acute care surgeon at Boston Medical Center. She serves as the vice chair of ASE DEI committee with interest in surgical education, healthcare disparities, and outcomes research. And Dr. Ricardo Bello is a surgical oncology fellow at Medical College of Wisconsin. He's graduating this year, so we congratulate him. He's an active member of the ASE Committee on Global Citizenship and Responsibility, has published and led talks on topic of climate change. Welcome to our guests, Drs. Theodore and Bello. I'm excited to speak with both of you today regarding the topic of climate change and the role of the modern surgeon. To get us started, can you share with the audience a little about how you got interested in this topic, either as an instructor, learner, or both?
I think I'll start off. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a joy to be in a room with like-minded people and discussing a very important topic. I would like to admit that I knew absolutely nothing about this topic before I was asked to give a lecture at Cambridge College about 6 to 9 months ago. And I told them that I wasn't the right person to give this lecture because I didn't know as much in it. And it's not something that I had researched. But they were like, it doesn't matter. You're a surgeon. You should give this lecture. So it's always great when we're given opportunities like that, because it causes us to not only to, in the role of becoming a teacher, be also a learner. So I did a ton of research for this talk. And I learned that this is a huge problem. And I am part of the problem, the global eye, meaning surgery. And it definitely was an eye opener for me. And since that talk, I have taken to learning more about this, having conversations about it, and also teaching from the knowledge that I'm gaining.
For me, I've always been a little bit of an outdoors enthusiast. And in my home country of Venezuela, I always was climbing these glaciers that I would hear that were bigger before, and now they're smaller. We had a couple of natural disasters that were pretty terrible in the country. And I've always read about climate change and how like this is very important, but it didn't dawn on me that we were part of the problem until maybe my fourth year of residency, when I realized how wasteful we are. And we do all these things at home to make sure that we're recycling, that we, you know, we think about what the politicians are doing. But I think at work, at least I wasn't really thinking about what my impact was. So just like Dr. Theodore, I realized that I'm part of the problem, and that when we open more instruments that we need to, when we waste medical resources, it's not only the cost, but it's also the carbon emissions that we create unnecessarily because of this. So that's what started me also reading about the impact of surgery on climate change and got me started on this research topic.
Fabulous. I would admit that probably like most of the audience, I know very little about this topic and my role as a surgeon. So would you be able to ground us a little bit on this topic and tell us about the impact that climate parameters actually have on human health, and which groups are experiencing more of the negative impact?
Well, we know that the temperature is rising, and we know that this is something that has been consistent and has been measured over time. What's really hard to pinpoint is all the ways that different things that we're seeing in human health are related to that, you know, because we're seeing natural disasters happening more frequently, having fires and extremes of temperature on both directions happening more frequently. But what we really are not really measuring and reporting back to the public is the fact that medical supply chain interruptions, that changes in cardiovascular disease and respiratory disease are actually related to climate change. And this is not really like a before and after that you can just measure, just like COVID, that everyone was interested in statistics. It's really hard to say, well, this is as many excess deaths that we have because of climate change. So it makes it a very slow, progressive, insidious onset of worsening of other currently existing medical problems. I think that has been a little bit of a barrier in the advocacy for changes for climate change. We have to be very, very clear that things are getting worse slowly, and that this is completely preventable.
I agree with Dr. Bello. I think the overarching the umbrella of illnesses that are affected by climate change are heat illnesses, respiratory illnesses, water-related, food systems, insect-related, mental health, and all of these things you start to think of are more so dealt with by our emergency medicine, family medicine, and internal medicine colleagues. And we think, okay, well, what does this have to do with surgery? But we don't understand that these all leak into effects of perioperative care, right? If a patient is suffering for respiratory illness prior to surgery, that's going to change your perioperative management. There's also an increased trauma burden. We know that in looking at the U.S. map, in states that are warmer than the other states usually have a lot larger trauma burden. I know for us over at Boston Trauma, in the summer months, we have a larger trauma burden. So if you keep it warmer for longer, your trauma burden increases. And this also causes an overall burden on the system, on the surgical infrastructure. And all of that only harms our patients. So I think before it was more so our colleagues on the maternal medicine, family medicine, emergency medicine side of things, sort of speaking up on this issue because they were seeing the effects kind of head on. And like Dr. Bello mentioned, this is an additive thing. And now we're starting to see it on the side of surgery because those same patients that see our colleagues see us as well. So.
I'm glad you asked about some populations being affected more than others, because it's really the most vulnerable populations, whether you know other countries are more vulnerable to changes in climate or within the United States that are going to be affected by this. If people have access to air conditioning, then a heat wave will be less affecting to them. But then obviously air conditioning only makes the problem worse. Our countries like ours will be able to mitigate changes and will be able to adapt, maybe not in other places of the world.
So as surgical educators, we want to care about climate change. And in your experience, what are some of the changes that surgical services can make to make ourselves more environmentally sustainable?
I think one of the first things and sort of lower hanging fruit is thinking about some of the direct effects. Dr. Bello mentioned disposable devices. So I know that sometimes we'll open one and open another one and thinking about that amount of waste that we're creating. Hospitals as a system are the second most energy intensive commercial building in the US, with the operating room accounts for 20 to 30% of that. So this disposable devices, inhaled gases, waste that we're sending out, the electricity that we're using. So being more mindful in terms of what supplies are you using when you're doing that bedside IND, right? You might think, it's just another kit that I'm opening. It's like, can you use the one kit? How can you be as efficient as possible when you're putting in that central line? When you are gowning or gloving for the case, if you know you need to leave in 30 minutes for an interview or for a lecture or something like that, is there someone else that can maybe do those kinds of small things that we might think are so little? If we're all doing it, it becomes huge.
And there's some big changes too at the level of the structure for healthcare systems. So having advocacy and representation in the decision-making bodies for the hospital will be important too. One of the big contributors to the use of energy in the operating room is the HVAC system, so heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So just having a say in the safety of decreasing the number of air exchanges per hour has a huge impact in giving permission to the facility staff in having lower energy expenditure with the same patient safety. Similarly, switching to LED lighting has a big impact on how much of the energy we consume, switching to renewable sources for energy, choosing environmentally preferable procurement for our medical devices. All these things are also important. So while we're doing the behavioral changes that we need to do to reduce the waste that we produce, reduce the use, increase the use of recycling, we should also do the structural changes that decrease at a larger scale how much we actually emit in terms of carbon emissions.
Sounds like you guys have a lot of great initiatives that maybe you have tried or started in your own institution and also in your personal practice. I was wondering, what were some of the barriers or challenges that that you've come across, both on a systems level and also maybe on an individual level?
Well, I would say I'm just getting started in terms of implementation, and I've seen the barriers, of course. You know, we're all very busy. We all really care about the patient that we have in front of us. It's much harder to care about the future patients or the patients who are in other parts of the country or even the world when we have someone that's right in front of us. And we want to make sure that our patients are safe, and we want to make sure that we have all that we need to take care of them. So that's why we open extra things. We don't want any delays. We want things to be very streamlined. And sometimes that means using a little bit more resources. I think the learning, the change theory to how we have to just basically change our behavior is one of the biggest barriers. Another big barrier that plays to see is the capital barrier. So we know what we should be doing, and we know what kind of infrastructure will allow for a more climate-friendly surgical service. But it's really hard for places to get the capital so that they can invest in the smart HVAC system or the LED lighting. And you know, all the things that they need to have so that it can be more environmentally sustainable. And this is something that I think we have more, if we have better and better estimating for cost and for the cost savings that some of these interventions can have, then we can probably unlock a lot of interventions that are not only environmentally friendly, but also cost saving.
I agree. I think one of the big things is a change in culture. And that's one of the hardest things to change. And I think it happens at a grand scale and at a smaller scale too. Personally, it's just having conversations with others and expressing to them my ignorance in this topic not too long ago and having that be okay and, you know, exchanging of ideas. It is also on a grander level collaboration. Like I've mentioned, our colleagues in internal medicine and family medicine and EM have been fighting this fight for quite some time. And I do think that banding together and speaking to hospital leadership is much more effective than having individual conversations with our specialties and hospital leadership. So I think it makes for a bigger force and an impact when we kind of get together. So I know at BU, there are already systems in place with those other specialties that are working on initiatives. And us as surgery, we're just trying to join in. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, but we can definitely add to the man or woman power that is needed in order to push this agenda forward.
Yeah, I'm curious as to what differences have you noticed in the potential for leading change between medical students versus residents versus like fellow versus faculty. I know, you know, both of you are at different levels of your career and just wondering and how should these differences impact our approach to, you know, reducing carbon emissions?
I would say it's not coincidence that this is a forum for surgical educators and we're talking about this. It's not only a problem of the future, it's definitely a problem of the present too, but the solution involves the newer generations. I've been really amazed and I really admire how much enthusiasm and organization medical students have had over this topic. Wherever I've gone, they already have a group that's already talking about these things. And they're enthusiastic, smart, and very proactive too. I think the medical student approach has been a little bit more holistic. From a surgical resident approach, I've seen people are very interested, but they're also very busy. And it's really hard to start new projects, but it's really easy. And you know, I found a lot of good support in supporting already existing projects. And I would say for people who are already in practice, you know, people are doing so many things at the same time that those are the people who actually are making the decisions nowadays, and those will be important targets. And I think sometimes can be the hardest ones to convert into our side in changing the way that we do surgery.
I completely agree. I do feel like medical students are always at the cutting edge of innovation. They're usually the first people to kind of catch on. And even if an idea sounds sort of out there and not really obtainable, they're like, oh, no, we can do it. And I've seen this definitely through an organization that I have been lucky to be a part of, Socially Responsible Surgery, that was started in 2014 with one faculty member and some medical students in her living room. And to see it grow now to 2024 with 22 different chapters across the US. And on my end, as the national outreach chair of that organization, I have been trying to speak the message of climate change and encourage other chapters to have this as part of their service learning projects. And I find that my medical students are the first ones that are like, oh, I'd love to join that. And I get a larger percentage of them than my residents signing up. Again, I think because of how busy the residents are. But that being said, I will go to the operating room and we all like a special type of drape for a special type of case. And most times my senior resident is there and making sure the all the instruments and all the things are all the way that, you know, you would like it. And I have caught a glimpse of them saying, well, that's not the drape that she likes to use, but she's not going to want to open a new one. So we're just going to use that one. And it's that small little thing that I hope that they bring forward to another attending's operating room, and that attending brings it to their partner. And the small little seeds of change, we shouldn't discredit those for making big, impactful changes.
It really warms my heart to talk about young people and them being the leaders of change. So, you know, as we've been talking about, this is a relatively new topic for most surgeons. What are the areas that you see are understudied or poorly understood with respect to climate change and the role of the surgeons, in your opinion? What are the best next steps with respect to research in this area?
So I think this goes back to one of your initial questions about which communities are affected the most. And Dr. Bello mentioned that it's the communities, not surprisingly, that are underserved, those with the less amount of resources. And I think as being a trauma surgeon, one thing that I did not realize in doing my research for the initial talk I gave on this was the increased level of trauma and how communities that are already suffering from, you know, resource poor, food insecurity, all types of issues that affect their overall health since it affects their social determinants of health are now on top of that experiencing increased trauma, be it motor vehicle collisions, violent trauma, whatever it is. And I don't see enough about this spoken about in the trauma surgery literature because I just don't think people realize this enough and don't realize this as a factor. So I'd love to see that discussed more so in trauma surgery forums. And that's where I would like to see this go.
And I think the research should parallel advocacy at all levels. Locally, you know, we need to be working into the implementation of the effectiveness of the interventions that we are that we're rolling out. So here at MCW, there is a great pre-incision recycling program, which is now rolled out as a whole program. And there's a couple of good experiences that we've had with the infrastructural changes. So we just got a grant to look at how we can implement this in the other smaller hospitals within the health system. And I think we should be really looking at those barriers, how we can learn from each other and have that cross-discipline discussion about how we can make the facility staff and the cafeteria staff also be able to parallel us in the same work. Like Dr. Theodore said, we're basically joining in and other people are doing amazing work in this and we have to learn from them too. At a national and international level, there is a lot of initiatives too, not only for research, but also for education and for advocacy. So I'm pretty lucky to be part of a task force from SAGES and EAES, which is the European counterpart of SAGES, where they're rolling out a survey to try to understand attitudes and also the willingness that people, that members have to try to understand a little bit more and learn more about climate change and surgery's impact on climate change. So the more that we understand these things, the better we can implement all the interventions that we know are evidence-based and effective.
Well, time is short and we're drawing to a conclusion. I want to leave our audiences with a lasting message with respect to climate change. What's an underlying takeaway you want listeners to get from this episode of our ASC podcast?
So my message would be, first of all, thank you so much for listening and for having us on the podcast. And second of all, we are talking about patient safety. So it's either the future patient or the patient who's not right in front of us on the OR table but we are talking about the patient's safety at a population level. So all the things that we can do without affecting our patient that we have in front of us, we need to really be doing that. You know, other industries are working towards reducing their net emissions by half and then doing net zero emissions like 2030 and 2050 respectively. We need to catch up with them because we emit 8 to 10% of carbon emissions of the United States in the healthcare industry. And like Dr. Theodore said, the OR is a main source of carbon emissions within hospitals. So we all have to be working together for this.
I echo all of that. I also thank you so much for having us on this podcast, for introducing this topic in this conversation. I think that we need to think of this as a real problem, a real tangible problem, like any other problem that's in front of us, right? Like if we have a patient in front of us and they're bleeding, we know we got to get to the bleeder, we got to stop the bleeding. And this might not be as visual as a problem, but if we take a step back, we can see that this is affecting our individual patients, our communities, nationally, globally. This is everyone's problem. From the top of the C-suite to the person, to the, you know, to wherever, everyone has to be involved. We all have to work together. That's the only way we're going to make a better future for ourselves and the generations to come.
Well, I want to thank both of you for sharing your expertise. And for our listeners out there, I just want you to know that Doctors Bellow and Theodore are running a climate change workshop for surgeons at the next ASE meeting in April. So if you're not a member, if you are a member, come to the meeting and sign up for this workshop so we can all learn more from each other as we have on this podcast today. And thank you both so much. And thank you all listeners for joining us on this very fun and enlightening episode for me on this ASE podcast series. And I will see you next time. Thank you.
And that wraps up another edition of the ASE podcast brought to you by the Communications Committee of the Association for Surgical Education. You can check out many great resources on the ASE website at www.surgicaleducation.com. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast series where we discuss pressing issues in surgical education. We invite you to join the ASE and get involved, and wish you much success in your pursuit of surgical education excellence.